Going to the peak is the goal here as a successful startup. Most of the founders, for some reason, pick the mountain they see first and start climbing. Mm-hmm. Before thinking about, is this the right mountain to climb? And am I prepared well? Because it takes the same amount of effort, time, energy, and hard work, whether you climb a small mountain or the large mountain.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to a new episode of the Insights podcast series from Accel. I'm your host, Anand Daniel. In this episode, we are continuing with the discussion we had on SaaS in podcast number 46 in the Insights podcast series. And so, if you have not already, please do listen to the earlier one for the full story. Rejoining me today are Shekhar Kirani from Accel and Krish Subramanian, co-founder and CEO of ChargeBee. ChargeBee is one of the leading SaaS payment platforms globally and services customers across 53 countries, processing over $3 billion of annual invoicing. Shekhar and Accel have been part of the ChargeBee journey from its seed stage in 2014. Today, we are going to dive deeper on the topic of starting a SaaS company and some of the best practices for that. Let's dive right in. How do you go about starting a good SaaS company, Shekhar?
Yeah, there are two ways. Yeah. Most of the entrepreneurs pick the second way, which I'll tell you. The way I recommend nowadays is the analogy of climbing a mountain. Most of the founders spend same amount of energy, same amount of effort, same amount of intent to climb the mountain. And if the going to the peak is the goal here as a successful startup, most of the founders, for some reason, pick the mountain they see first and start climbing. Mm-hmm. Before thinking about, is this the right mountain to climb? And am I prepared well? Because it takes the same amount of effort, time, energy, and hard work, whether you climb a small mountain or the large mountain. You know, it is like very simply being able to move one step away. It doesn't matter how big the mountain is. Every climber has to go one step at a time. And you repeat number of steps you do correctly without falling down with good harness, you can kind of go to any peak, right? But what happens is most of the entrepreneurs, due to lack of knowledge or a passionate understanding of an idea that they fall in love with, they start solving that problem. And halfway through, they realize that it's a small mountain. And now they think, I've conquered this mountain. I want to go to a larger mountain, which means you have to abandon that peak and go somewhere else. It becomes very hard. Mm-hmm. And this is the type where I worry about, where if you're starting today and you're aware of how the world operates, I would take a little bit of time off and study the market map of what mountains exist there or what type of problems exist there in the area you're interested in. Spend talking to at least 50 to 100 potential customers and the ecosystem players in that ecosystem and understand how the business gets operated and the problems that you think that exist and validate the same. And that, you know, this doesn't take a lot of time, maximum maybe 2-3 months. And at the end of that, you have a much better idea of, is the problem worth solving? And if I do solve that problem, how big is that opportunity? And who are the players in that industry today that I have to fight against so that I have a chance to win? And are there opportunities where I can take advantage of my learning and me being in India that gives me an edge over others so that I have a chance of success? This part is like, I calling it as, have you picked the right mountain to climb?
That's a very good analogy. So Krish, what would you advise for as getting ready to climb the mountain? What should someone do? Or figuring out which the mountain is.
I don't have advice, but I can actually, if I were to do it all over again, yeah, right, I can actually talk about that experience part, right? When we started, I think one advice I got was, make sure that you have 36 months of runway to figure this out, right? You're smart enough to somehow find some answer, but then make sure that you're able to stay at least for 36 months because we decided to bootstrap. That was advice I got from one of the mentors in the previous company that I left.
Got it. Sorry. Before the going into starting also, like let's say you're a college pass out. So do you right away start or would you advise them to do something else before, like maybe a little bit of your rewind of your journey? How did you and your co-founders?
Sure.
And then we'll get into the picking the mountain. Yeah.
Sure. So we got lucky with actually picking the right one because of by virtue of our industry experience, right? We each of us had 10 to 12 years of experience solving B2B problems in a global context. Right. And building products. Three of my co-founders were building products. So if I were to start all over again, I would actually start with a lot of customer research and market research. But a proxy for that was solid grounding in industry experience for us.
Mm.
Right. By learning with other people's money.
Mm.
Right. Three of my co-founders were part of Zoho journey for especially building cloud based SaaS products from 2006 to 2011 before we started ChargeBee. Right. It's hard to actually put a weight on that experience where you somebody's paying you to actually learn on the job.
Hmm.
That is an anecdotal example that is available. On the other side is, if you are someone who has a different context, and then there are plenty of examples of successful people who actually start from the very beginning, right out of college or within from college, they actually try it out. But that is where a lot of people fall in love with their passion, thinking, I will start a company around my passion, which could be music industry or something else, right? Thinking if this is interesting to me and then 10 of my friends, then there must be a large market.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
And that is where we actually make mistakes, because we think the market is large, or we don't even think about how large is the opportunity. And then we start solving our own problems. It may be a very good idea, a way to validate how to learn how to build and solve a problem. But that may not make a business eventually, right? So the ability to actually sustain and let's say live off parents' money, right? Which is a luxury and a privilege for a lot of folks here in India, right? We all live with parents, and culturally somewhere it's actually a huge luxury where your parents continue to finance your education, and then they also allow you to stay with them. Actually, they don't want you to move out.
Yeah, very different from the West.
And that, in some sense, is a huge advantage for somebody coming out of college, where you apply those advantages to your benefit by actually building products. But we see plenty of examples of people actually climbing the wrong mountain there, right? Where you think that problem exists, and then you spend 7 years, 5 years, 7 years, your precious years where you could actually take risk, picking a problem that you are so bullish on that idea, but you are not ready to actually take your head out to actually see what else is there in our world and spend 5 precious years or 7 precious years building the same thing, that would be wrong. Mm-hmm. My advice would be, right, if you are starting out right out of college, try to build better context. Or if you think you want to start solving something, understand that what you're actually trying to do is learning to build a product and taking it to market, validate, invalidate your hypothesis, and then go back to building that context, right? In ChargeBee, we have more than 25 people who are ex-founders, right? Some of them have successful companies that are still running. Some of them have exited companies. Some of them don't have the same story to actually claim a success. But it doesn't matter. Some of them actually joined us because they wanted to build the context of, okay, I was building an agency business. I was building a food tech business, but I want to know what it takes to actually build a SaaS company. I want to build context. Now they are part of the journey with 20 years of experience. Right? Or some of them straight out of college, they started a company and then realized that that's not what I wanted to do. I think there are plenty of ways in which you can actually go solve a problem with somebody else also, which is the best way where you can actually get a fast track MBA or a fast track. Somebody pays you to actually learn on the job is the best way, right? Because there are so many SaaS companies today that are getting built. I envy people who are actually able to go through that journey, right? That would be my advice.
Got it. Great. So Shekhar, any tips on picking the right mountain? And the taller the mountain here, it's better, right? So unlike if you go just generally hiking, you want to pick lazy guys like me.
Yeah. Right. See, there are two further analogies.
Yeah.
If you're keeping the mountain analogy.
Yeah.
One, I love those mountains that are small today, but as a founder, you know, ahead of everyone else, that mountain is actually growing. It's a growing mountain that nobody else knows, nobody has spotted, therefore nobody is coming at it, and you are the first one. Those are phenomenal ones where you are advantaged. By the time everybody realizes and that mountain is visible, you're already halfway through. So you own that mountain literally.
Okay.
Right? That is phenomenal advantage.
Give us
an
example.
If you look at it on the software as a service CRM, you know, Salesforce started early on. CRM was a category, but software as a service delivery of CRM was not there before. And they were the first they were the first to get there and push themselves in. And by the time all the existing CRM vendors and new folks figured out that there is a category with the software as a service possibility, they were already so big and now continuing to dominate the CRM as a category, which is one of the large categories.
Greater than 10 billion in revenue themselves. You
know, yeah. Maybe closer to, I don't know. 13 billion. More than 13 billion in revenue.
Yeah.
Right? But I think there is a little bit nuance point there, Shekhar, right? First mover is not necessarily the case,
yes.
Right? That is one of the first companies to actually start on a trend.
Yes.
I think is more important, right? Yeah. Chargebee is not the first in subscription billing, mm-hmm. right? But we consider ourselves very lucky to have started where we spotted an opportunity that focusing on SaaS and SaaS-like business, building infrastructure for SaaS companies is a very good thing because software will shift more and more towards SaaS and towards subscription models and eventually it will become large, right? Is something that somewhere within us, we knew that and then we spotted a trend and we kept building, right? And today I can see that we have a massive advantage in actually at least going through the phase of learning how the SaaS companies are getting built and how the infrastructure is evolving with our customers over the last 7 years of building this product with them.
Got it. Yeah.
And so spotting a trend and then in an opportunity that is continuing to grow.
A mountain that can grow.
Yes.
Right.
The other example is in the last recent years is HubSpot, right? When they realized ahead of most of the other companies that content-driven marketing is going to be the way because people would use search engine to search on the content. And if all companies would use content as a way to be discoverable and everybody has to figure out how to use content the right way. And HubSpot came up with a set of tools early on that enabled every other company to get better in creation, management and distribution of content so that they became the underpinning of a lot of companies. And before everybody realized, they were kind of the massive company in this category.
I have a point to add there, right? Dharmesh, founder and CTO of HubSpot, started with Brian Halligan, right? Mm-hmm. But the beautiful story before that was Dharmesh ran another company for 7 years. And one of his regrets that he documented in a blog is holding on to that company for too long, a little longer than he should have, so he could have had the opportunity to start HubSpot a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He held on to that company because of the emotional baggage, because he picked something and he wanted to see it through. And then he kept doing that, even though he knew that that is not going to be very large. Right? And then he had to take a stop, pause somewhere, and then went on to go back to academic, met Brian Halligan, right? And then built the hypothesis around picking the right category to actually solve a problem. And then went on to build HubSpot, where they started with the community first, right? Evangelize the problem first, before building the product.
Mm.
That was a phenomenal story of a company that is now scaling beyond $600 million in revenue, focusing on SMB and then evolving into mid-market and then continuing to grow with just SMB and mid-market as a hypothesis. But if you look at it, they are exactly providing the infrastructure and toolkit, a method for remote distribution of products from anywhere in the world, right? Marketing has to be distributed if you are going to be building products from anywhere.
Mm.
You have to generate inbound interest to do it. And that story is what they are selling and helping companies do it. So spotting that wave much ahead of time, right, in a growing opportunity is just phenomenal. I think being able to take a pause and then understand that market opportunity before doing that, I think goes hand in hand.
The second opportunity, which gives an edge sitting in India, are those mountains where there are a lot of players, but either they are tired or they're not able to innovate fast enough with the modern tool sets. And if somebody is starting out new, they can come up with a better product where the market has been established and with the use cases that they're not able to solve, but the team from India can solve and build a better product. And that is quite a lot of companies, whether it is even Chargebee you look at it or Freshworks, they're all in a category where I call it as I'm building a multiple X better product than what exists today and show value at maybe 2x, 3x the value at half the cost. So that opportunity is massive today for entrepreneurs coming out of India for building global markets.
What's the 3x the value at half the cost, right?
I say we start with 2x the value at half the cost, okay. 4x advantage. If you can do 3x at half the cost, you got 6 advantage.
Yeah.
You can actually continue to make that advantage in your favor
but
over
what's
time.
What's the advantage of doing that out of India?
See, as I said, you know, you can use the same dollars to go longer.
Mm.
You know, if your competition is not offering 24/7 support, you offer 24/7 support.
Mm.
If you want to do implementation services, you get people to do implementation services. If your competition is offering 5 integrations, you offer 50 integrations. You know, they're all engineering problems. We know how to solve those problems if we understand the context that this is the way customers want and we can win. Chai, Krish, what do you think?
Right. I think the India advantage is also about not your metrics of profitably serving a customer. You do not have the pressure of having to move upmarket into enterprise too fast. You can let your product mature longer and serve a SMB or a mid-market customer and treat them like an enterprise customer, right? That service level advantage to profitably serve a customer from anywhere in the world comes with how much input cost is there to build and also serve your customers. And that opportunity is also there. For example, any hot market, let's say like the same marketing automation for that Adobe has today, right? Like Omniture for enterprise is a very hot category where there will be a lot of investment dollars that will follow that enterprise market. But if you are going to be a bootstrap entrepreneur who's actually going to solve for that problem for SMB market, you could actually do it with a massive cost advantage, but structurally setting it up very differently and then continuing to treat your customer like an enterprise customer, give that same level of treatment, but you will be able to do that from here, right? But it's a question of which segment do I want to serve profitably and how do I construct this company?
Got it. Okay. So two things, pick mountains that can grow. And the second is if you're going after a mountain that's already got other players, provide a lot more value and hopefully at a lesser cost. Anything else on picking the mountain side?
Spend time understanding the players and the context and the customer and where the market is heading. Because that gives you an edge. Because when you're starting fresh, you don't have any baggage. You don't have existing customers. You don't have any existing relationships. That's actually a significant advantage for you when you're starting fresh so that you don't have to repeat the mistakes or commitments other companies have made. So you can start with a clean slate and take advantage of where the market is heading towards. And if you build a better product and better service, there is a higher chance that you can change the customers and catch them and get faster rollout compared to what the existing players can do.
Got it.
I think as an example is the security and compliance space today, right? Which is a beautifully evolving space. Existing players have no clue how to actually go solve that in a very agile manner for the customers. But if you think of even auditors in India, right, how they actually have to do banking audits or a business audit, today the level of mandate and scrutiny necessary is almost doing parallel audits along with the business, right? You have to verify voucher after voucher and then certify that in parallel. That's the level of compliance and scrutiny that is necessary, even global, on a global scale. If you are someone who actually understands this problem really well, what kind of SaaS product would you actually build that enables this kind of compliance and enablement checks solve this problem, right? The more you understand a problem and then you solve it in very interesting ways, right? I think there is a massive opportunity to do this.
Great value. So you could be from the industry, you understand the problem. That's one category. But let's say you picked a mountain, it looks good, right? So either it'll grow or there's someone else doing. How do you go about? Like, what's the next step? Do you start building something there or what's any advice on that?
See, there's a lot of content around how do I build my team? You know, if I don't have a co-founder, how do I select or work with and create the founding team? You want diversity of thought in terms of domain expertise so that everybody brings to the table a significant advantage. And to succeed, if you understand what is needed, then you add those skills early on, increasing the odds of success. So step one is, as I said, picking the right mountain. Then step two is picking the right team that you want to go with to climb that mountain. And you know, if you have a wrong team, then again, you know, you will not be helping each other.
What's a good founding team?
The good founding team is, one is the most critical thing in my mind is the ability to learn. Because nobody comes to the table with all the skills ready so that they can easily climb. So you need an ability to learn and ability to support each other so that together as a company, you can learn. That's the first fundamental skill. Mm-hmm. And secondly, they should have enough skills and advantages so that everybody brings to the table something unique and value that is required for the task at hand. that's the second key part. If you have these two skills early on, ability to learn and ability to work together, the rest you can actually conquer.
Mm. So you're not saying if one person is building, the other person should figure out how to take that to market, all those, like we've heard advice like that, love to hear.
Because it's us, I think that is essential, right? I don't think the ability to actually stay longer and then continue building comes when you have a full rounded team where somebody is able to build and take this to market, right? That's your ideal team.
Yeah.
I think it touches upon the point that you made earlier, right? Working in a company gives you the better chance of actually spotting people who are complementary to you, not your first best friend who says, hey, let's start a company together.
Which is common.
Which is also common, right? And then even people go to go and do MBAs thinking I will actually meet somebody, right? But if you should be very lucky if one of your MBA classmates is someone who's a geek, who can actually build, and you are able to focus on the market, right? If you're expecting that somebody else will hopefully, I can hire someone, outsource this development, that would be a very hard path because there's a talent war out there with respect to attracting the developers who are able to go create software, right? So a fully well-rounded team in my mind is someone where you are able to go create the software yourself. The skills to actually go take it to market are learnable, right? Actually, all skills are learnable, but creating good software has to be a core skill.
And which means product and tech, could be one or two people, someone who's able to spec out the product and then someone is able to build.
And then take it to market, right? And then the go-to-market function where somebody is continuously learning what are the best way where I can actually get somebody on a phone call and then actually talk to them. The GTM function, right?
Yeah.
You don't even have to
go to market.
Let's say no marketing and sales, but at least you should know consultatively support and solve a customer problem.
Mm.
Right? That's a good starting point to actually learn more about sales and marketing.
Okay, so climbing the mountain, like now you've talked about mountain, picking the team to climb the mountain, right? And which is assembling this team. And then do you start climbing, which is start building, or what's the step one after that?
See, I like the founders who, when you start, it's very hard where to start. So if you have two prototypical customers that you are building for, I would recommend them to get at least maybe 3-4 customers and not more than that, who are encouraging and qualified, bleeding edge kind of customers who are willing to give feedback and co-create the product with them so that your product value is feedback is very short and you build the right product for that market. Picking your first 3-4 customers is again both an art and a science. Once you have those customers right and you build a great product, then you have a first set of referenceable customers. And from there, you can add additional customers and grow it.
Mm-hmm.
If you pick the wrong customers, you would have built the wrong product. But if you pick the right customers early on, you would build a great product. So this is, again, contextually doing a lot of homework and picking one or two customers who are going to be with you to build a great product is the best way to jumpstart a startup.
Got it. So I want to take a segue for a second and say you touched on go-to-market, GTM, you called it. How important is to figure out the GTM before starting to build or going down this? You picked a mountain, looks beautiful, but let's say the go-to-market is actually physical door-to-door sales in the US or UK, right? Versus maybe a tip, like what are your thoughts on how do you think about GTM at that stage or after building when you pick the mountain?
Right. Yeah. So as someone who did not understand the difference between marketing and sales when we started out 8 years back, right? Mm-hmm. And then now in hindsight, I can actually reflect on how naive I was. I can say that I don't think you need to know what is a full-fledged GTM plan or any of that, right? But what is definitely necessary is what would it take for me to find a customer and sell to the customer is extremely important. If I have to visit the customer, go install, right, or go set it up for them, right, and it's going to take 10 meetings face-to-face to sell to a committee of people, then I know that I'm actually in an enterprise path and trying to say I'll bootstrap the company out of Chennai with a limited capital of, let's say, 10 lakh rupees is not going to cut it.
Mm.
Right? You will definitely need a much different plan altogether with respect to how you would go to market, take this to customers. But there is an alternate path for everything, right? Where you actually build a product that is self-service or a customer can actually touch and feel and then try the product before they buy, and you are able to generate inbound interest. If you can actually figure that out, at least intuitively know how the customer will consume the product, then you know that there is a path to actually profitably building this where you can figure out the rest of the pieces, which is, am I going to generate through, am I going to give all the money to Google and then somehow generate interest, right? Or am I going to get it through inbound marketing and so on and so forth? And do I need to go visit the customer or can I actually sell through a video call, right? Those are the pieces where you can actually figure this out, right? It is enough if you actually understand the mode of selling rather than actually having how exactly you will do this at scale. In my opinion, I think that is sufficient. But having said that, right, I want to touch upon the previous part. If I were to do it all over again, how would I do it, right?
Sure.
We got started with actually building out a full-fledged website, which is, in hindsight, I think it's a stupid mistake. You spend 4 weeks trying to build a website, even before building the product is first of all wrong. And then building the product without actually talking to prospective customers is even worse. If I were to do it all over again, I would actually inverse the order. Right, I would then only write my value proposition, refine my value proposition, try and find people who are hanging out in, let's say, different forums, right? If I'm building a recurring billing product, I will go hang out in all the recurring, this is what we did. We went and hung out in all the payment gateway forums, finding out where people are actually cribbing about their problem. If I'm building a compliance product, I'll try and find where the customers are hanging out and discussing solutions to that problem. You spot that, understand that, engage with them. And then I would go about thinking about what problem am I solving? What is the value proposition? And then before even writing the first line of code.
Right? Got it.
We mentioned just, right, it's counterintuitive. We said a full stack team requires somebody who can build and somebody who can take it to market. But I'm saying the counterintuitive thing here, which is understanding the customer problem is extremely important. Don't write a line of code, right? Unless it's for your own practice and then you're going to throw that code away. Feel free to write more code and practice. But imagining that whatever you started building is going to be your base, that particular product is what you're going to actually solve for, is very naive, in my opinion, right? If I were to do it all over again, I would actually start understanding the customer problem, validate that, talk to people as if my product exists and see how excited they will get. And then help them with the solutions that are available and through solutions that are available in the market. That's okay. But it is much better than wasting 3 years of your time building something, trying to sell that, right? And then hitting a wall again and again and then figuring that, oh, there's no market, right? The customer actually doesn't have this problem. I would rather not do that.
So talking to a lot of customers before writing even a single line of code, is it right? It's common advice across industries and more so here, looks like it. Shekhar, anything to add to that?
I think so. See, in the go-to-market question you had, you know, what you're looking for in the market is a change. If the market is not willing to change and you believe is not going to change and their behavior is going to be the same way and the existing players are going to serve the same way, then you don't have an edge. But you are looking for a change or a crack in the market that is going to be different. You know, before they used to buy only desktop-based products. There are industries even today where I talked about Zenoti and CareStack. The customers are buying desktop products even today. So they're not being exposed to the cloud product. But they're starting to look at the advantage of the cloud. They've not gotten the benefit of it. These are the cases where you have an advantage getting in compared to the existing players. And these advantages may not last long enough. But if you can recognize that there is a change that is anticipated are going to happen and behavior of that change will affect customers and you are aware of it, and if you can use that to your advantage, there is a much higher chance of building a better product, anticipating that change versus saying that I like this category, I like these companies, I'll build a somehow improved product and somehow customers will buy it. Because your go-to-market and everything else is around the change or the need, or a change in behavior, a change of anticipated functionality that you want to get in.
Great. So anything, so we've defined how to pick the mountain, how to pick your team to climb the mountain, and then go talk to a lot of customers. You could call them Sherpas on the mountain, go talk to a lot of them, really learn about it. Then you start building, then you start working on the go-to-market. Maybe these two and three go hand in hand to a certain extent, right? So this is what I'm hearing, as in just get a sense for how will you eventually perfect it, but at least will they buy just looking at your product, or will they need a phone call, or will they need a face-to-face, like knowing all this. Anything else on?
I think Krish touched upon it. Building a product is becoming a commodity today. But what to build and why am I building that and what's the leverage I'm going to get with this product with my customers, that context is becoming very premium. And that context, only way you're going to get it is either you come from the industry or you speak to the experts in that industry, hundreds of conversations, so that you have a better context of how people are buying today and how people may change to buy today. That gives you an edge of both go-to-market as well as how do I build the product and how do I get away building the least amount, your MVP, minimum viable product for that market, so that you get an early advantage of some revenue and some customers, and then you can expand.
Got it.
A classic example is one of the developers who recently left ChargeBee, right? We did not spot this problem, but somewhere he thinks that in the entire QA process, there's a much, much better way of actually doing it. And he believes that there's a product opportunity out there in the way you build a SaaS product and then take it to quality assurance and how you release the features, right? That capability. He believes that he has seen the inefficiency and he has gone through the pain that he believes there is a way to actually solve it better, and existing products are not doing it. Probably a better hypothesis. Right? And that's a very good way to actually start with a minimum viable problem and a minimum viable product.
So he has felt that need. So through his own journey.
Experience.
Only thing I would do there is before he builds the product, he should go and talk to 50 SaaS founders at this scale.
SaaS developers or founders?
SaaS founders or SaaS companies are the QA heads of those, to see what he felt fits in their world, and they agree or give him feedback that this would fit well or some additional changes required.
Because it could be your own echo chamber, or it could be our inefficiency that is actually causing the problem, or is it how the world operates? Is this how the world operates? It's extremely important, right? Solving one problem, you're not building a service business to go consult and then solve one customer's problem. You want this to be something that is a common pattern to hundreds and thousands of customers in the future.
Yeah.
And that is why it's very important to validate your hypothesis, validate your assumptions, invalidate your assumptions.
Yeah. In this case, dev tools, right? Like from GitHub to everywhere, like you can go and do that. And then when do you figure out, will people be willing to pay for it? You solve this, let's say it's widespread, but we haven't talked about willingness to pay or how much money you can make out of that, right?
So it's a big topic as well.
Yeah.
Probably another podcast. But just to summarize, if people are already paying for that need, that is one example that, you know, there's already people are paying. But most of the SaaS ideas nowadays is a new tool that people are not paying today. I'll give an example. You know, anything that crosses the boundary, say people are using some spreadsheets and sending back and forth, and email and spreadsheet is doing the work, and you think there is a new tool required that does a better job than using spreadsheet and email. So in the old way, there is no extra money available, because spreadsheet and email, you already paid, you're using it, and you are arbitraging time. But if you build a product for that, that requires a lot more nuanced conversations to say how many hours it would save, or what is the benefit the customers see across, and who is both sides will pay or one person will pay. That part requires a lot more work early on in conversations, because you can ask these questions to your potential customers. What features need to be added for you to pay? Or are you the person who would make the payment, or somebody else in the org? So because sometimes users are different, customers are different. That nuances also, you get a feel for it when you have enough conversations.
And I think this example of HubSpot's second product line, which started as Sidekick CRM, is a fantastic example here. They said, I will help you track the delivery and open rate of email. Right? If somebody opens, I'll notify you. When they actually gave it to marketers, they loved it. But they were resisting paying $49 for the product per month, because they probably were sending outbound emails to people who wanted to invite as guest bloggers or other things, like maybe 10, 20 emails a month. But the same product of tracking and open rates and other things, when they gave it to outbound salespeople, their living and success depends on the knowing whether my email subject is working, whether my prospects are opening my email or not. They assign a much higher weightage to the same problem, same product. So it's very important to understand the nuanced aspect of who is the prospective buyer. Am I selling a vitamin or a painkiller? That depends on the context of the user, right? And the world that they live in and what their success depends on.
Great. Great. So this, we can go we can go on this topic, looks like it. But we've given an overview of the mountain, how to pick it and how to climb it. So on that note, happy climbing to all the listeners, founders. Before closing, a quick rapid fire round, right? So each of you will go. So what's your favorite book, Krish?
Hard Things About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz.
Good. You?
I'm still looking for a lot of favorite books. I don't have anything specific today.
Shikhar, reboot.
No? Best piece of business advice that you got, Krish?
Monetize early, as early as possible.
Okay, great. And one attribute for a successful founder, Shikhar?
Art of storytelling.
And why is that important?
Because there is no way you can build a large company without having a large, successful, high-quality team. And you can't attract a high-quality team to follow you without you be able to tell why you exist and why this company would be successful and what is the world impact it would create. And hence, your ability to narrate stories and explain yourself in a better way is a very significant advantage for entrepreneurs to attract the right talent.
Great. Personal productivity tool or app that you like, Krish?
Google Keep.
Google Keep. Okay. Good one. Fun fact about you that no one knows. Both of you.
Oh. I sledge while I play anything.
Oh. Sports. Okay. Shikhar.
Well, I'm not sure I have something that is, I need some more time to think on this.
Other than your hairstyle, which everyone knows. Good.
Maybe my public photo doesn't reflect who I am.
Good. On that note, really appreciate you taking so much time off your busy schedules to share your knowledge with up and coming founders. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today, we discuss how to go about starting a successful SaaS company. And Shikhar discussed his mountain climbing analogy for starting up, getting mountain ready, surveying which mountain to climb, mapping out the trajectory, and finally climbing. Hope you enjoyed that. You can find more podcasts from the Insights podcast series from Accel at insidespodcast.in and also look forward to hearing from you at Accel_India on Twitter. Please do follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you prefer listening to your podcasts. And we would greatly appreciate it if you can leave your reviews there so that other listeners can discover this podcast. Thank you.